Hey, it's Brian. Later this week, we are running a promo for an incredible discount on premium memberships at workinsports.com. If you join our private Facebook group for the Work in Sports podcast, you'll be the first to know about this promo and others in the future. You'll also get great benefits for yourself. Get this. Group member Brian Angelotti just posted in the group, I think yesterday, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically said, "I'm interviewing for a sales role with a team. Anyone have any advice for me?" Well, guess who stepped up and volunteered to help in this group? Cleveland Browns manager of ticket sales, Mike Judge, and Milwaukee Bucks senior group sales director, Carl Manto. That's pretty incredible, right? I mean, they've both been guests on the show. They both are part of our podcast group now. So really, you got to go to Facebook, search for the Work in Sports podcast, answer a few of my simple questions to join the group, because I want to make sure you're not some crazy spammer, and you're in. And you can engage with hundreds of other aspiring sports employees, people in their early career, guests of the podcast, and little old me. Like I said, cool promo coming later this week. Great deal at workinsports.com for our memberships. We have over 17,000 jobs in the sports industry right now looking for people like you. So join the group. You'll find out about that promo. You'll sign up. Everything will be happy and great and wonderful. All right, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning at workinsports.com. And this is the Work in Sports podcast. There's a theme for today, and it is persistence. I'm not one of those rise and grind disciples. You see and hear people all the time talking about the grind. You got to love the grind. You got to throw yourself in. Got to give it your all, etc., etc., etc. I read people on Twitter and other social media outlets with their little quips and sayings, and I get it. That is motivation for many people. Go for it if that is you. It is 100% not me. I hear rise and grind, and I immediately think that person is lacking efficient systems to perform their job and has a lack of balance. Maybe that makes me the weird one. Well, okay, actually, let me rephrase. That likely makes me the weird one. Nobody else thinks that way, I wouldn't think. Don't get confused. I work hard. Work is important to me. Achieving is important to me. Helping is important to me. But this idea of being a slave to the job, I don't know, it really isn't. There is this new trend in being healthy, right? Intermittent fasting, they call it. Could be a fad, could blow over, but it is an interesting premise. For those of you who are unaware, it is limiting your food consumption to an 8-hour window each day. So you set yourself a schedule. From 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., I am allowed to eat. Then for 16 hours, I am not. I kind of feel the same way about work. I don't want to grind all day. No interest in that. I want to do my job to my absolute best, metaphorically eat everything in sight, and then shut it down and get on to other things. Now, mind you, this is a personal evolution for me, and I'm in my 40s. I was a grinder. Matter of fact, I was the very definition of the word. I always saw myself as much less talented than everyone else around me, so I would only get ahead by out-hustling and outworking everyone, and it worked. And this is a good short-term plan, but it is not sustainable. I became obsessed instead with systems and processes in my 30s. I wanted to focus not on outworking everyone, but by operating in a smarter fashion than others so that I could go for a walk with my wife or coach my daughter's soccer team and be present in that moment without concern for missing the grind. Well, what does this all have to do with persistence? Part of being smarter is setting systems that allow you to work without thinking, creating processes you can repeat or that remind you or that set you up for success rather than reinventing everything every day just because you have to grind and you have to move faster, 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 faster. For example, late 2018, I reached out to today's guest and asked him to come on the show. He said, "Sounds great, let's do it." But over the next couple weeks, we struggled to connect and it kind of fell off of his radar. No worries, this happens. He's in season. Scheduling can be tough. But rather than stress or forget about it, like everything I do in my life now, I set myself a simple reminder. In 6 months, contact him again. I didn't have to think about it. I would get the reminder later. I didn't have to worry about grinding. I moved on to somebody else in that moment. I got another guest. 6 months pass. I reach out. He remembers me. We get team approval. And here we are. I'm interviewing Joe Cuomo, Brooklyn Nets equipment manager. It's not always the grind, people. It's persistence. And it's the systems you put in place that help you get where you want to go. Now, look, we all have moments of grind. I'm not saying you won't. There are busy seasons. There are tough times. There's times you need to get through things. But you can't do it all the time. And having that attitude that you have to isn't going to be the thing that sets you up for success. But enough about me. Let's learn more about Joe Cuomo, Brooklyn Nets equipment manager. Hey, Joe, how's it going today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing great, and I'm so appreciative of you coming on. We were just talking before we started the interview, and Joe let it be known that this is a really busy season before the season starts for in the NBA. So thank you again for carving out a little bit of time and coming on and talking with us.
Absolutely. Happy to be a part of it.
Yeah. So let's start out at your beginning, because I think that's the most interesting part of almost every person's journey. You attended University of Central Florida. You earned a management degree with a focus in sports management. But why sports? What inspired you to pursue a career in this industry? What was that moment that kind of said to you, this is what I want to do?
Well, it kind of came to me by just happenstance. I knew that at a very, young age, probably about my junior year in high school, that I wasn't going to be a professional athlete.
Right.
So I kind of had to realign my expectations as far as my future. Kind of had to, look at my skills and see what I was good at, what I was not so good at. And I kind of felt that going into college at UCF that I would kind of target, going the business route. And it just so happened that when I was taking one of my first elective courses, a general business course at UCF, that I came across this sports business minor at the time at UCF. So was very intrigued by that, as well as pretty much everyone else in the class.
Right.
But it kind of took some time. Believe it or not, although there seemed to be much interest in such a field, there was some issues with funding on the university end. So it wasn't until about 2 years later that the minor was in full effect, and there was about 15 or so people in the classroom, and we kind of had to kind of grow the program. And, that not only in the classroom, but outside the classroom by seeking out opportunities to intern and volunteer. So that's kind of when I got my first taste and saw the sports as a very viable career and industry.
So you mentioned internships, and I also think it's funny that I went to school in the 1990s and sports management degrees didn't really exist. Like, this is somewhat of a new phenomenon over the last 20 years, and so many
Yep.
programs have popped up, and I'm somewhat jealous because I kind of wish I had that opportunity.
Yeah. I think it's a good and a bad thing, to be honest with you.
Okay, tell me. Expand.
I feel like sports management degrees are very specific, and as you and I know, these jobs are very hard to come by. So, and believe it or not, a lot of my colleagues that I look at and I look at their credentials, they don't necessarily have sports management backgrounds. So I would never advise someone to go the sports management specifically bachelor's degree route. For me, I was very lucky because it was kind of like a secondary thing. It was business first, sports second. And that actually followed me. And also that path also followed me later when I decided to go to grad school, and I got my MBA. My concentration was in sport management, but it was an MBA first and foremost.
That's really interesting.
So I just see too many people and job candidates who they major in sports management with it's just very specific, so it doesn't make them as appealing job candidates. Whereas a lot of sports teams, they also look for people from different backgrounds and different studies. So it's not necessarily a good thing, in my opinion, but if done correctly and within the proper school and focus, it could help one individual stand out from the next when it comes to a job.
I do think that's interesting. And one of the things we've talked about a lot on this podcast, when people ask and they say, like, okay, which sports management program should I take? Or should I enroll in? I never give a specific school, but I will tell them, I think the programs that are housed within the School of Business at a university are the best opportunities, because you're getting that foundation in, you know, accounting and HR and business and operations and all of those things that are instrumental in the industry. Because what everybody needs to remember is that sports is just a business, and it's just a much cooler packaging, right? It's a much more fun environment,
yep,
if you ask
absolutely.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's why UCF purposely keeps it as a minor. They are not interested in growing it into a bachelor's degree major. They do have the well-renowned DeVos School of Sports Business as a graduate degree, which is actually a dual master's, and that's a very selective and top-tier program. But the minor kind of stems from that, but on a much smaller scale. And you don't even have to be a business major nowadays. And back when I was at UCF from 05 to 09, you had to be in the School of Business. Nowadays, the minor has grown so big that you could minor in sports business without having to be within the School of Business.
That's interesting. One of the things we definitely agree on is the importance of getting experience through your college career. And you do that a lot of the times through internships. And you did that.
Yep.
You had a lot of different internships. And I think it's interesting.
Yes.
Your first one was in baseball. You worked for the Washington Nationals as an operations assistant and in the spring training box office. That was kind of your first big introduction to big time sports. What do you remember most about that experience?
Well, for me, it really set the tone for what my expectations were going to be, not only for the work itself and how demanding some of those tasks were, but for also landing a full-time job. Like, it was even after multiple internships, you know, two spring trainings and then a minor league season with the Nationals, I was still kind of at a crossroads where I wasn't going to have a full-time job. And that wasn't it wasn't indicative on my work. It was just on the opportunity. I think I came across one of the very outspoken trainers at the time that was with the Washington Nationals, and he encouraged me. You know, what's your next step? Like, what are your plans? Like, it was in a long ride to the airport where I finally got to connect with this individual, and you know, I thought about, you know, I contemplated going back to UCF and getting my master's degree, but he let me know right then and there that that wasn't a good idea reason, and he was absolutely right. He encouraged me to go somewhere where they're going to pay for your schooling, somewhere where you could get more industry contacts. He stressed to me that you're probably already topped out at UCF after 4 years. So he encouraged me to kind of step out of my comfort zone, expand my boundaries, and go elsewhere. So that's when I kind of knew then and there that, you know, this wasn't going to be a one and done, like, get with one organization type deal. I was going to have to find the right opportunities and then move on to be able to set myself up to eventually land a full-time job.
So that's really cool that somebody was willing to give you that kind of advice and to be that resolute in what they were saying and like, no.
Yes.
You want to do this thing over here. And it's so great to have a mentor or somebody like that that's willing to, you know, use their experience in the industry to share with you. So, okay, tell us, what was your next step then? What did you do?
Well, I graduated in December of 2009 from UCF, and at that point I was still contemplating the route to take. A lot of people say that, you know, you should jump right back into a master's degree. You know, the economy at the time wasn't as good as it is now, you know, and just kind of going back and forth, you know, weighing my options, seeing what was the next step. And, you know, I really took his advice to heart, so I started looking at programs that would set me up for success. And although UCF was a very well-renowned program and I did apply, ultimately I felt that Seton Hall University was the perfect fit for me, because it not only allowed me to earn an MBA and earn it at night, but it also allowed me to kind of take advantage of the industry contacts that they had in, as far as jobs and internships. So, you know, I decided to kind of dedicate the next 6 months to kind of prepping for the GMAT, And then I moved probably about in July of 2010. It was about 5 to 6 months after I graduated. I moved to New Jersey, where I was actually born and lived for the first 10 years of my life, and attended Seton Hall University.
So, okay. Now, Seton Hall is right outside of New York, right? So you've got,
yep.
They've got a huge reach to different teams, different networks, different agencies, whatever it may be. Did that experience, being at Seton Hall, did that help you get a new line of networking and different people you were getting to know and different experiences you were getting to have?
Yes. I mean, I think they have a very good reputation in this area for being an elite school. They're also, it also helps that their athletics have been doing well, so the notoriety is there backing it up. But I also knew, kind of just taking a step back for a second, when I talked to UCF grad students in the DeVos program, and I would ask them, well, hey, what's your next step? You know, you're going to graduate soon. Where are you going to move to? And every single one of them said New York, LA, you know, Chicago. It was all the big cities. So I said, you know, to kind of go along with what the trainer had told me at the Nationals, like, you know, what's going to help best put me in a position to succeed.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm going to go to those cities ahead of time because, you know, I don't know anybody. I don't know the GM or, you know, my cousin doesn't know a scout for a certain team. You know, I need to kind of create my own path. And the only way I'm going to do that is, you know, working for free. So that's when I decided, like, I need to go to grad school, if nothing else, but just to intern. And intern for free, because, you know, a lot of these teams don't want to pay students. You know, it's a very low risk to bring somebody in, So luckily I had the foundation from my time at UCF and with the Washington Nationals, but I needed to find somewhere that was going to, you know, help me take that next step. And so, yeah, that's pretty much the route I went.
So let's peel back a little bit further, actually.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
Like when you, I always advise people, like, sometimes I find that people go get their master's because it's almost like a delay tactic. Like, they're just like, I don't really know what I want to do, so I'll go get my master's and it'll buy me some more time to figure that out. And I tell people, that's a pretty expensive delay tactic. Like, you really should go get your master's if it's going to help you reach that next step. So you keep talking about, okay, what's your next step? Where are you going next? What's your next move? Well, your master's decision, what did you see that as the pivot point? Obviously, getting the internship and the experience and those things. But, like, did you have a goal at the end of, this is what I want to do in the sports industry, and this master's is going to help me get there?
I knew that by going to a university and allowing me the opportunities, you know, just by being associated with that university, that was going to help me get to where I needed to be. And I didn't have a clear sense of direction as to where and what type of field that I was going to be in. So, which is why there was an experimentation process.
Yeah.
And I did know that back from my undergrad days that it was highly encouraged that in order to advance in the sports industry, that you would need a master's degree at some point. Whether you do that right out of undergrad or later in life, that's totally, you know, up to you. But it was definitely brought to the attention of the students that it was necessary at some point. But for me, it wasn't really a delay tactic. It was more just like, I need a means to an end. I hate to put it that way, but it was really just a way to work for free, because legally, you know, that's how internships work, is that you know you're getting something in return, and it's not money, it's school credit.
Yeah.
And fortunately for me, there was a lot of change to the industry in the short amount of time. Nowadays, you have to be very delicate on how internships are offered. And a lot of teams don't offer internships because there came a point around 2012 to 2014 that a lot of interns within sports and entertainment, I guess they kind of banded together and they weren't, because they weren't necessarily doing job pertinent tasks. They were asked to do stuff outside of the job scope, and they weren't being paid for it. So they sued. And nowadays, it's very delicate. Like I said, they have to be paid, And those paid opportunities more often than not go to people who know people. So if I had been a few years late, I probably would not have been afforded the opportunities that I was.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's just something that I came across because a lawyer actually reached out to me on LinkedIn and asking me if I worked with this organization A from this day to this date.
Oh my gosh.
And saying that I was maybe entitled to back pay. And obviously I wasn't interested in really doing that because that organization had afforded me opportunity that I would have never gotten otherwise. So.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I think it was the movie Black Swan that kind of kicked that off. There were interns that were working on that movie that started the suit to fight against labor laws and intern rules and all that kind of thing, and it spread into the sports industry and it got kind of crazy there. I remember when I was a news director at Fox Sports Northwest, I was scared all the time about the hours we gave freelancers or the hours we gave interns, because if you hit certain thresholds, well, they become considered full-time employees and you have to give them benefits. And it's like this whole world that you don't think about when you are literally trying to do your everyday job, not necessarily thinking about all these other ramifications. So it is interesting how things have changed.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I take it that during the Seton Hall years, getting your master's was when you were working with the Mets. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So
yes.
You were in media. You go ahead.
I was working with the Mets during the day and taking classes and at night while
That's
also
crazy.
Trying to be a GA for the School of Business at Seton Hall.
Oh, my gosh. So at this point, you're still kind of figuring out your fit, I would imagine. You're in media relations. You're organizing daily news clips. You're sending press releases. You're working with reporters. And I mean, I always thought I loved working with media relations people because I was on the media side. So I had all my connections with teams were with the media relations people. And I could see that being a fun job. For a young person finding their way, it sounds pretty cool. How did it feel to you? Did you like that side of the industry?
Oh yeah, it was definitely a great experience for me, and I really wouldn't trade it for anything. But very different from what I had done previously and what I do today. It gave me a sense, now with my second team, gave me a sense for, how organizational cultures within sports are different, how they are the same. It was shirt and tie every day, no matter if it was 90 degrees out or 20 degrees out, you wore the same thing. You showed up at the same time every day. And, it was very humbling too, because I was living in New Jersey and like I said, attending Seton Hall, and commuting to, Flushing, Queens. It was probably about a 3-hour round trip commute per day.
Oh my gosh.
And on top of that, you're working in baseball, so there's sometimes extra innings and rain delays, and so sometimes you're not getting home till the wee hours of the morning, and then having to turn around and do it again the next day. So it was just a very further set precedents in my mind for the work ethic that needed to work and be successful in sports, and I really didn't. As I'm going through the motions for the entire year, it was an internship that turned into a part-time job halfway through the summer. I didn't really get a chance to kind of reflect on it until the very end. It was just very like, man, I really did that every single day, commuting. It was a grind, but I really felt like it helped prepare me for the next step ahead.
Yeah. And you know what? Baseball, and let's just speak honestly here. Baseball is a completely different beast. I mean, 162 game season, night after night after night during the dog days of the summer. Like it is a grind. Like it is the very definition of a grind, right?
Yeah, it is. The unpredictability really, really makes it a grind. And, it could kind of, it could be a two and a half hour game. It could be a 4-hour game. So, it kind of working on the media side, it just kind of gave me a different perspective on the industry and, jobs within within sports and entertainment.
Yeah, from my side on the media, we would know because I was a show producer and a news director. So if I had an 11 o'clock show, I know a basketball game is going to take 2.5 hours. I know a hockey game is going to take 2 hours and 20 minutes. If I have my lead story is a Red Sox Yankees game, I have no idea when that's going to end. Right.
Right. Exactly.
That's the unpredictability part of it. So after the Mets, you jumped to the Nets. All right. So basketball operations, 2012. You've been there ever since. What was your first impression of pro basketball as it compared to your experiences in baseball? Because like we just talked about, pretty different culture.
Yes, very much so. Well, you know, I had reached a crossroads with the Mets, and it was kind of like I was at that second one in my professional career where I was like, okay, I think it's time to move on and find something else. And I thought I was going to go work for a sports agent, and that kind of fell through. But the Nets was something that kind of popped out of nowhere. I felt like through Seton Hall, I must have applied for something in their marketing department. And they saw that I had operations experience on my resume from my days with the Nationals. So they called me up and they asked me if I was interested in an unpaid internship. And that was the then New Jersey Nets at the time, last season in Jersey. And, you know, one thing I've always learned is you always take the interview, you know, so yeah. That way, you know, you get a better perspective on what's being offered. And, you know, sometimes you come out of the interview feeling more positive about things. And for me, that's what happened. And they let me know right away. They were still in the middle of the NBA lockout.
Right.
But they knew it was going to end shortly, and they knew they needed some help. So they let me know within like a day or two, which was, I felt in my mind, was tremendous, because a lot of organizations, they kind of keep you in the wind. And, you know, it was very, I felt like I was wanted. So I took the unpaid internship, and it, you know, allowed me, you know, the benefits of being a little bit closer to school and a home, and, you know, with visions of, you know, possibly having a full-time opportunity once the team moves to Brooklyn, you know, in the back of my mind. But my first initial reactions of basketball was that, you know, and maybe this is more towards the organization and the culture, but, you know, it just seemed like you have a smaller roster, and the resources that we were afforded from the basketball side and up-and-coming team, it made the job a lot easier. So, and I'm working hand-in-hand with the players now, kind of back when I was with Washington, but even closer. So you're kind of in shock at first, because the resources are bountiful, and, you know, you're understanding that your role is much broader than it had been in the past. So, you know, essentially as an intern in basketball operations, I was like a concierge to not only the players and the training staff, but also to the front office. So, you know, I would start out the day, shirt and tie or polo, and, you know, by the mid-morning, I would have to go downstairs, change into my athletic clothes, and help out during practice. And once practice was over, I'd get the laundry started, and then it was back upstairs, you know, change into my business casual attire. So, you know, it was just very, very broad and very encompassing. So, it was a shock at first, but, you know, it was, you felt like you were doing meaningful work to support not only the front office, but, you know, everyone else involved.
Well, you must have done a pretty great job, because after, what, about 7 months in operations, you became the team equipment manager. It's not like there's courses in this. It's not like you have UCF and Seton Hall teaching you the ins and outs of being an equipment manager. So how did you learn the skills you needed to be like really the master of this job? Was it just kind of on the job training or learn as you go? Or did you have mentors? How did it all kind of play out for you?
Yeah, I would say that there were definitely some mentors along the way. But I knew that like towards the end of that shortened season that I kind of came to the revelation that, hey, this might be my niche.
Yeah.
You know, this is a viable career. And, you know, having a business background, I felt like it helped support that position. You know, cause it not my, although I had very, you know, limited like experience, you know, which I feel like did prepare me for the job. It was more my business background that helped me. You know, it just kind of like a different type of position on the basketball side. You know, so I, like I said, April, I come to the realization that this is a viable career, and then kind of luck, you know, I was afforded some luck. There was an opportunity that opened up. The team was moving. So I kind of stepped in and worked for free for the entire summer in hopes that, you know, they would consider me for the position. So, and fortunately, you know, I guess they recognized the work that I had put in, and they offered me the job in preparation to the 2012-13 season.
That's a pretty bold move. I like that. Just being there and working for free and making yourself visible to all of them.
I actually had to kind of, you know, just kind of stick around. You know, it was, you know, it was a kind of like an interesting summer because like we were going through the whole rebranding process, and our business operations had moved over to Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn, and we still had the plan was to stay in New Jersey for another 4 years and train before our new state-of-the-art practice facility was built. You know, I just kind of stuck around. I just, you know, I felt that, you know, if I stuck around and did a good job, that there was a good chance of something being offered. And fortunately for me, that's what happened.
Yeah, it sounds like you bet on yourself, which is kind of cool.
Yes.
So you hear the title equipment manager, and I think most mm-hmm. people probably get a vibe for what it means, what it takes. You know, you're ordering equipment, there's inventory needs, you're keeping the players and the coaches happy. But give us more of the in-depth look at what your job entails. What are some of your favorite parts of the job? What's kind of your day-to-day like? Give us a little bit of a vibe.
Yeah, the position, it's definitely evolved too since I've started, you know.
Okay.
Obviously there's you're ultimately responsible for the cleanliness of the locker room and for the gear that the players wear, ordering the right amounts and ordering the right shoe sizes, packing, you know, you're ultimately responsible for the team's, you know, equipment. Not only the items that you oversee, but also the medical staff. And then also helping out during practices, because you know you always need to be versatile and help rebound, you know, and just support the coaches and the players in any way that you can. So that's probably what my main responsibilities were starting out, and then they slowly started to grow. And that also was indicative of the industry and the equipment manager position as a whole. We started to see this traveling secretary position kind of dissipate in the NBA. Now you see it nowadays, the head equipment manager is also the travel manager.
Okay.
They oversee all the hotels and the flights and the buses. So that's a big part of my job now is overseeing that team travel aspect in addition to the equipment.
I would love to see your car. Like if you went on a road trip, like you probably like pack it like perfectly. Like, you know exactly how to, you know exactly how to maximize every square inch of your car to get as far as
real
you need to
Tetris.
Go. For the
exact, real life Tetris.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I love that.
Yeah.
So you're
absolutely.
On the, yeah, exactly. You're on the road with the team. It's a long season. How important are the relationships you form? You know, like the staff members, the team, the coaches, all that stuff, I would think really goes into making your work environment a positive experience. How important is it to kind of build those relationships and be the positive person in that group?
No, absolutely. You know, it's not only from a mental health standpoint, because, you know, you're with these people, 50 to 60 days on the road per year. You know, it's also, you know, you need it for your job, you know, in order to form cohesion and communication that's necessary in everyday life. You know, it's important to be on the same page and to work together. And, you know, it's not always, you know, about you know, the job and about work. It's, you know, it's about, you know, how you could understand each other. And, you know, maybe you go out for dinner one night. And it definitely helps build camaraderie, and it helps you achieve a sense of teamwork that allows you to do your job better.
Yeah, that's so important. So what about, you've talked about the role changing in your time with the organization and just in the NBA at whole. How much do you interact with other groups within the team, like marketing and sales, community relations? Is there cross-functionality? Do you guys, you know, work on projects together? Is it important to know a lot of different people within the organization? How does that kind of work?
Yes, absolutely. And I would say myself and maybe one or two other individuals on the basketball side, more so than anybody else on the basketball side, there's some crossover. One of the things that attracted me to this position is I very much feel that it's a business position on the basketball side. There's a lot of procurement involved. There's a lot of just managing people and, you know, items, inventory management. And, you know, that's what really attracted to me. So having a business background, I realize, you know, that's a huge part of our game. And it's a huge, you know, part of what allows us to operate and spend money on the basketball side. So, I try to support departments like partnership marketing and sales in any way that I can. So we'll, you know, we'll collaborate on, you know, what uniforms being worn, you know, each game of the year. So that way, you know, we could really push those items in the team store that day. And, you know, it kind of just is a natural extension for what marketing initiatives or giveaways are, that are going on for that particular game.
That's,
with partnership, you know, what makes sense from a sponsorship standpoint? How can we maximize revenue based off of, you know, what we need and, you know, a potential sponsor? Like, what are they willing to, you know, to supply us and help the or help the team operate more efficiently? But, you know, make it strategic so that way both sides are benefiting.
You also hire and manage the part-time team attendance. So what do you look for when you make those hires? And would you consider this a pretty great training ground for someone who wants to work in equipment management? Like, I can envision everybody listening right now thinking to themselves like, okay, how do I get into this? Well, I would think some of these part-time team attendant roles might be really important for somebody who wants to go that route. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for anybody who wants to work in the sports industry, you know, this would be a great starting point. And a lot of people who've come through these doors, they get jobs both in and outside of sports. It helps them land a career opportunity. And if nothing else, it's Brooklyn Nets on your resume.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a great talking point for an interview. So, and you know, you're often pulled in many different directions and you're asked to do different things. So, you know, if you do a good job here, it kind of shows a potential employer, like, you know, how good of a worker you are. But things that I specifically look for, you know, it really depends on the position a little bit, because we kind of have a different model where, you know, some positions are more basketball focused and they help out. They're more so assistants on the floor. And some are more back of the house, where they need to, you know, be able to multitask better. So, but it, as a general prerequisites to this job, you need to be able to, you know, work as a team. And I know that's a very generic answer, but more specifically, my definition of that is, can you give direction as well as take it? Because a lot of people want to give direction, but I want someone who's also willing to take it from someone who's more senior, or even someone who's more lower level, because everyone needs a little motivation sometimes, or a little direction when it comes to certain situations. And then I also look for someone who's able to identify their weaknesses or areas of improvement, because what I'm looking for is personal growth. And, you know, I think that comes a long ways in developing a team, as well as developing an individual.
I love that. That's really great advice. So we were talking before this interview, and you were saying that you go back down to UCF a lot, and you know, speak in classes and give advice and try to help people out. I know everybody listening in our audience is captivated right now, and many of them are probably thinking this is the kind of career, like being on the court with players and just being in the operations side of a team, that is probably very interesting to them. Are there specific pieces of advice you've give to them or anybody that would want to pursue a career in the sports industry? Looking back on your, you know, 8 to 10 years in the industry now, are there certain things that you would say, all right, people, this is what you really need to focus on?
Yes. Well, first and foremost, the business route, like we mentioned before. I think that's tremendous right there, because you don't want to pigeonhole yourself with a very specific degree. You want something that's going to be multifunctional and allow you to cross over to different industries. For as far as equipment management, it's a very rewarding career. The demands and the stakes are very high. You always have to be a step ahead of everyone else. You know, I'm often planning 2 months ahead when we're either in season or out of season, just because like that's what the requirements are nowadays. You have to be able to own up to your mistakes, because there will be some, and be able to take harsh criticism, because it's, you know, it sometimes, you know, that's how it is. It's just you need to be able to do that in order to improve and be a better for your team. And, you know, and lastly, you won't be able to get there without a little luck along the way. So for me, you know, it was kind of trying to create my own luck and just putting myself in positions that I felt would allow me to, you know, for things to fall in the right direction. So I know that sounds kind of odd, but you just kind of have to be patient with it. And, you know, the timing and the luck will come.
No, I think that makes perfect sense, because I do think I've had other people say something similar to me before, is that you put yourself in a position to have luck happen. And it sounds like a lot of your opportunities out there where you were present and available and willing to do whatever it took put you in a position to be lucky, right? All those things were available to happen. If you were sitting in your dorm room or back in your apartment in New Jersey, rather than being in front of people at the Mets or with the Nets, those things wouldn't have happened. So putting yourself in those opportunities are so important.
Yes. And one thing I will also say is when you're in those opportunities, it's very important in my mind. I've seen both sides of the spectrum in terms of networking. Like, you want to make the most out of your opportunity, but I like to compare networking like walking a tightrope, because you could sway one way or the other. And for me, when I was from my first experiences in sports, I was taught you speak when spoken to. Now, I feel that might be kind of harsh in a way, but it allowed me not to put my foot in my mouth, you know, and kind of like, you know, appear discreditable in front of other people.
Yeah.
And but then I've also seen the other end of the spectrum where there's people who just don't want to shut up, and they're trying to talk and rub elbows with higher level people. And, you know, I think they immediately get dismissed because maybe they're a little annoying, and maybe they're not trying to be, but they're just trying to develop a rapport. But there's also a time and a place for that. So that's why I compare networking to like walking a tightrope. You got to be kind of very even keel. You know, you got to be able to mingle and talk to the right individuals, but there's a time and a place, and you can't do it too much because then you're going to sway the one way or the other.
I am laughing so hard on the inside right now because it's so true. It's like some people just don't know how to shut up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Joe, you're so right. Like, it's like there really is a fine line of when to be really, you know, involved and active, and when to just shut up and listen. Right. You know, I totally get it. I love it.
And for me, I think I was maybe on the opposite end, and maybe I should have spoken a little bit more, and maybe I would have gotten to where I needed to be quicker, or maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that a good recipe of both is what you need in order to walk that tightrope.
Well, Joe, I can't thank you enough for coming on and talking with us. I know you've got a crazy season ahead, a lot of changes with the Brooklyn Nets, a lot of good things happening, I'm sure. And I'm so thankful for you coming on and just sharing so much of your journey and your story. So thank you. I know everyone will really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be a part of it. And thanks for having me on.
Thanks to Joe for coming on and sharing more about his world in the NBA. I loved how simpatico we were on a lot of those things in there, you know, like getting that business background, networking in the right manners, picking the right times, knowing when to shut up. I just love that. I still am kind of chuckling a little bit. It's fascinating to hear what it's like working with the players and doing your best to serve the team. He kept saying that he was a concierge for the team, or he's trying to help the team or assist the team. And that's a great attitude. And those working relationships and all those important parts of the experience, right? Thanks for listening, everyone. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast, share it with a friend or 50, give us a positive review wherever you listen, because it helps us remain at the top of the podcast directories and allows more people to find the show, which helps me keep my job. All right, everyone, time to get back to work.